Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well. Let's good. Talk about Afghanistan today. Yeah. We haven't talked about Afghanistan for a couple days. But there's a little bit of news in there, you know, about the 17th year anniversary of this horrible war. And it's been made, the point has been made, and we were talking about this, is, you know, the kids being born today that might be involved, because they're 17, 18 years old, weren't even born when this happened. And I understand if you do polling in a place like Afghanistan, they have no idea. Even if you said 9/11, with the problem 9/11, they don't even know what it is. And I imagine that's probably the case with a lot of Americans too. But anyway, it lingers, and you know, the big challenge is how long is it going to go? The president has, you know, a job on his hands, trying to figure out what to do with Afghanistan. But it's something we've spent a lot of money. It's hard to separate the money for the war in Afghanistan and not, you know, Iraq. But for the whole thing going on since 2001, it went $7 trillion.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do a lot with that, you know, $7 trillion. It isn't so much that that would be left in the kitty. People think, oh, yeah, then we can spend it on something else. Now, that's the way a liberal would say. But we say save the $7 trillion and return it to the people. And, you know, it may be there would be more of a market phenomenon. But that's a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of threat. But there's still a lot of trouble this week. You know, even on this anniversary, they pointed out there's still a lot of killing going on over there. Civilians, you know, collateral damage. They're dying. And there's Al-Qaeda there, and there's suicide terrorism still going on. But they call that Operation Enduring Freedom.
Yeah.
But but it doesn't look like freedom is enduring there. It's an endless war. So it didn't turn out well. I think the poll showed that just about 50% of the American people are saying, we've had enough. Why don't we just come home? Let's quit this. I'm surprised it's so low.
Yeah.
And it continues, and it doesn't really look like it's going to end quickly, even though a few people are suggesting strongly that it ends. But it makes no sense for us to be there unless some commercial interests or special interests are driving, you know, this war for reasons other than national security. Who believes that we've been there and spending all that money so that our security in this country would be more so, and that we would be protected from anybody attacking us?
Yeah, exactly. And I know I've made the point on the show before, but my son was a toddler when we went in. He was just a little over a year old, and now he's going off to college. He's 18 years old, you know. So his entire life.
He doesn't remember it, does he?
He doesn't remember, but his entire life. And the issue about this less than 50%, I wonder actually if the reason it's so low, people opposing it is so low, is because people just don't even think about it anymore. It's become so normalized that we're over there at war, we're propping up their government, we're giving them billions of dollars, we're fighting the Taliban. It's almost like the book 1984, you know. We've always been at war in Afghanistan.
You know, the factions over there are not quite as complicated as Syria. I think that's a little bit more complex. But we have the Taliban, and we have our government. You know, the government that exists for Afghanistan is our government that we have set up. So some people don't like that. The Taliban don't like foreign involvement. But now there's Al-Qaeda there and ISIS there. But they essentially weren't there before 9/11. I mean, they didn't exist. But now they have set up, you know, an operation there. And I find it of interest that the suicide terrorism has picked up, because people in Afghanistan generally weren't doing this. And the Taliban isn't the people who promote suicide terrorism. And Robert Pape, the author that we've often quoted, he did a study of this and claimed that the most important reason why anybody's motivated for committing suicide in a terrorist way, and I believe before I read his book that it was religious. It was always religious fanatics. And he said, no, it's occupation. So the people there, now that suicide terrorism is picking up, there must be this very strong sense that they're just under occupation. And they've been used to that a couple thousand years, but they don't like it. And no matter how long it lasts, no matter how many times they try it, they really have a free spirit about saying, this is our homeland, and we'll take care of ourselves, and we don't want outside interference. And so that's why this war goes on so long.
And, you know, although Al-Qaeda was there, and that was the ostensible reason that we went into Afghanistan, because the Taliban harbored Al-Qaeda, as we know now. They just allowed them to set up some camps there. They were also, the people who attacked us were also in other places, including the U.S. But the Al-Qaeda was driven out very quickly in the war, very early on in the war, you know, when we went in, and we just stayed. We kept staying because the Taliban, the people who actually lived there, didn't want us to stay there. And so really it is our interventionism, our intervention in Afghanistan that has made the country so weak. And now that ISIS is cropping up, which is the enemy of the Taliban, ISIS crops in. So there's another cause to spell out. There's another justification for us to stay. So no matter what happens, we keep creating the problem and then solving the problem by creating new problems. It's an eternal war.
Well, the other justification is we got to find that bad guy, Bin Laden. You know, he orchestrated this whole thing, which is up for debate. But anyway, it was thought that he could still be around there. The truth is he probably left there very soon. The truth is we don't know the truth.
Yeah.
And they finally acknowledged that he has been killed, but there was no public display of anything. So, but that was a justification. And, of course, the authority to use military force was written to deal with the people who brought about 9/11. It didn't bring about a declaration of war against Afghanistan, and that's quite a bit different. But just think how long this war has been going on with an authority, which is total fiction, that we were to be there to occupy and democratize Afghanistan.
Yeah, and that was a tough vote for you, I know, and I think I had just come on board your office back then, and it was a tough vote, voting for it. But going back to that time, you know, when you voted yes to go after them, and I think it was certainly a justifiable vote, you know, these people did attack us. But what were you thinking in terms of time when you voted there? How long would we have to do this?
Well, when you read this, it's not real, real long and complex. It wasn't a declaration of war, and they were pretending it really was. And it was far from perfect, but it was difficult for me to think that a person in Congress could do nothing. I mean, there was a significant attack. I would like to, of course, the authority would have been there to go after Saudi Arabia, you know, all 15 out of 19. And you always hope they'll use the authority correctly. But that, of course, didn't happen. So they take authority and misuse it. So I was not excited about doing this and it was going to be a great victory. I worried about it, you know, being not followed closely. But there was an attempt by a few of us to keep it as narrow as possible. But it turned out that, you know, in many ways, I think that it sort of taught me a lesson. It doesn't matter what's written. They take an oath to the Constitution. What does it matter? You know, they do what they want. I still believe that instead of the document itself, you have to have, people, the representatives, the men and women who represent it, of character, so that they do the right thing and follow the rules. The saying that I guess after the Constitution was written it's a republic if you can keep it. And then of course Adams said that it depends on the moral people to follow. The Constitution may be even better than they describe. You could write a perfect document, but even this imperfect document was made much worse because we didn't have the type of people who would send the right people who really believed in liberty. And of course, that trend is what we're trying to reverse to the point where the rules and regulations are minimal. It's crystal clear what freedom is all about, and that you have people who understand that rather than all the special interests.
Yeah, and you look at 17 years of war in Afghanistan, and what have we achieved? We spent, I'm sure, well over $1 trillion. Back in 2008, there was actually one good thing that came out of an NDAA bill, and that was the establishment of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. And they have issued, from that you know, based from that legislation, quarterly reports. They're now in their 40th quarterly report. And it's actually been very, very helpful and useful. One of the few useful things, because they have gone into great detail about the money that's been spent in Afghanistan and what we get out of it. And we do know now that the Taliban controls more territory than at any point since 9/11.
Wow.
So they are controlling more territory. But there are other things, the wasted money. They just finished a report on July 30th. We talked a little bit about it. That was their 40th report. They found that out of $104 billion for stabilization and reconstruction, at least $17 billion has been discovered to be totally wasted. Not partially, totally wasted. Could you imagine, you know, you look in your checkbook and $17 billion is gone. What did I blow that on?
Well, you know, I'm always looking at the big picture, and I want to look at the big picture a little bit here, because we're looking at the war, the 9/11, the authority, and the abuse, and the lingering on, the inefficiencies. But the policy is still important, and Gareth Porter, a friend of ours, has written a very thoughtful article to talk about this. So he points out some of Trump's shortcomings, but then he goes and uses what he has said and what he has done and what he claims he believes in, and see, it doesn't fit in to exactly what's happened. And he, I think Porter was trying to make the point that Trump may be closer to our side, you know, because of the things, but then we see contradictions all the time, you know, of that. You know, I'd like to believe it. I think probably is true, but I get all confused about his appointments, you know. The appointments would have been a lot different. I mean, to listen to Bolton and these other guys, there can't be much sincere effort, but it might be part of his strategy for all we know, because he, you know, he doesn't speak softly and carry a big stick. He carries a weak stick and talks tough.
Yeah. So,
and I don't know whether that's the answer, but it might be his strategy. And so far, I think there's a lot of very dangerous spots, and we haven't removed ourselves from very much. But he has not created. Obama was a more dangerous president than Trump.
Yeah,
and when you
ways.
Think of how many Americans have died, and if you compare him to Bush, you know, a lot better. But it sure would be nice if we could contribute to ironing some of these inconsistencies out and push him to take what he has said, the stuff that we have liked to hear, and say, look, you can do it. Get the right advisors there, you know. It's a struggle to understand his foreign policy, because right now, for a while, we had to complain about his rough talk against North Korea.
Yeah.
And now, well, they're back at least talking again.
Yeah, and you're right. This Gareth Porter piece is important. It's about a week old. And I think we had it on the RPI website, and I think antiwar.com had it. I think I forget where it originated, but it's worth taking a look. But now, he quotes a lot from the Woodward book. And so we have to kind of take that into consideration and in context, because there's a lot of controversy about the accuracy of Bob Woodward's reporting. However, when we talked about this before the show, Dr. Paul, you know, taking what Woodward said about this particular aspect and thinking about what Trump himself was saying, not only on the campaign trail, but leading up to it for years, I think it's reasonable to assume that there's some truth in there, that Trump did not want to stay in Afghanistan. He genuinely did want to get out. But as Gareth points out from the Woodward book, he was up against McMaster, he was up against Mattis, he was up against his own people that were just constantly yapping in his ear. McMaster wanted to ramp up troops, and Trump wanted to draw them down. And so McMaster pulled out the ISIS and Al-Qaeda card. Hey, they're going to, you know, more ISIS. And here's a quote that they put out from Trump. I want to get out, and you're telling me the answer is to get deeper in?
Yeah.
It's almost like
good
something out of The Godfather. But then Mattis, this is the thing, though, if you think about how psychologically manipulating Trump, imagine how Trump's psychology is. According to this, Mattis was telling Trump, hey, if you don't put more troops in, you're going to be just like Obama. Remember when he pulled those troops out of Iraq and everything fell apart? Of course, we never talk about why this is going to fall apart in the first place,
yeah,
which is our intervention. But that's kind of an interesting window on how this dynamics work.
Yeah. waiting for the right time to come out, it can be an eternity. So my position was not complex. We just marched in there, and we can just march out. But, you know, one place where I think the president has a greater challenge, and that's when he's dealing with Iran, because we point out where he said good things about getting out of these wars, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan and all. But in Iran, he's been pretty consistent. He never praised Iran. He never praised the nuclear deal with Iran. Yeah. And he undid that, and now his sanctions on there. So that is removed. And there are some special groups around the world, here and abroad, who put a lot of pressure on him to do that. So I think that would be the biggest obstacle. And sometimes, even though you could conceivably separate Iran from Afghanistan, it's not likely to happen. It's sort of an attitude. You know, if you back down here, you're going to back down over here. But that's why, of course, it's easy for us to defend our position because it's so clear cut and it's so correct. You know, just stay out of war. Be for peace and prosperity. Follow the Constitution. Don't get in these undeclared wars. Be willing to trade with people, willing to talk to people. That doesn't seem so complex. But they get all confused, and we're in the midst of, you know, trade wars going on, and you look at the trade wars, well, that's not right. Yeah, well, just think, the new NAFTA treaty, that's probably going to help us a whole lot. Well, maybe it won't help us out as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I know you mentioned that the big picture is important, and it is very important, but sometimes these things are so massive, it's easier to take them in small bites. And so I would just pick out a couple of things from the Special Inspector General's report to talk about. And, you know, think about the absolute waste. In 2008, the Pentagon bought 20 refurbished cargo planes for the Afghan Air Force. They spent $486 million on these planes, $500 million on the planes. And they were deemed death traps. There were no spare parts. The planes couldn't fly, totally useless. They were able to recoup some of their costs, though, because they sold the planes for scrap metal, $32,000. So they spent $500 million, Dr. Paul, got $32,000. Just one more, $8.4 billion they spent on counter-narcotics in Afghanistan. It turns out Afghanistan is producing more heroin than even before the war. So they're spending $8 billion and actually getting the opposite results. As our good friend Walter Jones has quoted when he talked about this report, this is a black hole, and it is a black
boy,
hole.
Dr. Boy, Paul. That's for sure. And this pointing out of the waste is very important, and we'd have bills come up, you know, to curtail waste and abuse and fraud, which we should make that attempt. But I was never very optimistic about it, because I think once there's a vote, once there's a declaration of an expenditure, it's immediately wasteful. It's just not inefficiency. It's just not poor management. It's a system that can't be managed. It's sort of like saying, oh, if we could only change the membership of the Federal Reserve Board, we would have proper interest rates. We would find out what the market wants, and we would create these market interest rates. No, you can't do that. You can't have efficient monetary policy from the Federal Reserve. And in this sense, and I'm not against trying the best to save this money, but like Daniel points out, so much of it is down a black hole. And the efficiency thing doesn't work. Military and governments are notoriously inefficient. And that is what's neat about a society based on liberty, because it's neat, it's less complex, it's moral, and for every reason in the world, if it were to be pursued, you'd have a greater chance for peace and prosperity. Now, how can anybody be opposed to that? I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.